Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Siobhan Sheridan Ayala, and I represent the petitioner, Ms. Jacqueline Patricia Catalan Mata. And may it please the court, I wanted to present arguments to the court today about why Ms. Catalan Mata deserves a remand for seeking a reasonable fear, that she should have been approved by the immigration court for seeking a reasonable fear so that she would have been able to present her case in withholding only proceedings. The question before the court today is whether substantial evidence compels a contrary conclusion to the immigration court's decision. The primary question before the court is whether Ms. Catalan is a member of a particular social group and whether she is deserving of protection under the Convention Against Torture. The immigration judge first denied Ms. Catalan's argument based on legal arguments that she was not making, and he refused to accept new evidence contrary to Bartolome, which indicates that there is a de novo review of the immigration judge's decision from the asylum office. He refused to accept new evidence, and so Ms. Catalan attempted to file a motion to reopen after the decision was already made. And in that motion to reopen, it was denied based on the fact that the judge concluded that the evidence was not substantial enough to change the result of the proceeding. So we submit that the evidence was substantial enough, and it's very very substantial. The persecution that she suffered, her daughters, Astrid Daniela Ruiz Catalan and Jacqueline Julius Ruiz Catalan, were both murdered. There is a controlling precedent that appears to be directly on point, Henriquez Rivas. There are some important differences between Henriquez Rivas and Ms. Catalan's case, but those do not undermine her eligibility for withholding of removal based on those differences. Specifically, her case is high profile. She submitted evidence that her daughter's murders were publicized both in the printed press as well as the television. The case never was brought to trial. Nevertheless, she and her husband were placed in the witness protection program in Guatemala. The fact that Guatemala has a witness protection program, we submitted today a motion to take judicial notice of that law. And in Henriquez Rivas, the court relied on the Salvadoran law to find that the criminal witnesses were a particular social group because of that law that provided for witness protection. She and her husband made complaints about the daughter's murders in three separate locations. They made a complaint with the police in the local locality, with the National Public Ministry Office, and then the Office Against Femicide. So they were actively pursuing the investigation of their daughter's murders on multiple fronts. And they received, I see you want to ask a question.
I would like to ask a question because it seems to me that the IJ here assumed, without deciding everything that you're arguing here, I think, that Ms. Catalan was one in one or both of the groups, the family or the witnesses against, you know, the cartel. And instead, the IJ focused and determined that Ms. Catalan had failed to establish that her prosecution was on account of a protected group because it was based on a personal nature, a personal vendetta. Is that correct?
Well, it's hard to understand or know exactly what the IJ was thinking, because in looking at the orders, they just cite to case law. And so it's really difficult to know whether or not he thought what the basis was. In terms of nexus, is that what the court is requesting information on? I have some thoughts about nexus.
Well, yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what do we need to decide here, because I think, is it, you know, the government, I think it's the government that's arguing that the panel should just address only the nexus question. And I thought it was the government, but maybe and remand to the IJ for a determination whether Ms. Catalan established membership in a particular social.
Yes, Your Honor, I did. Yes, I don't want to interrupt you.
No, if we disagree with the nexus finding. So I'm just trying to figure out what is our focus right now and what's the remedy that you are seeking?
Okay, well, yes, Your Honor, the remedy we're seeking is that the case be remanded to the immigration judge for with instructions that she does meet a reasonable fear threshold. Regarding nexus, I know the government argued that in their opening briefs, or excuse me, their responsive briefs, but I just don't see that that's supported in the record. There was the asylum officer's decision, and then there was the immigration judge's decision, and it seemed as if the immigration judge relied heavily on the asylum officer's decision, and that the nexus, they said basically that she wasn't persecuted on account of a protected ground. So that either is could mean nexus, or it could mean that she doesn't belong to a particular social group. So to me, it's not clear, and perhaps a remand to clarify that issue would be appropriate. But regarding nexus, yes, Barajas Romero is exactly on point, Your Honor, for withholding of removal. The requirement is only that the persecution be on account of a protected ground. It doesn't need to even be one central ground as it is in asylum. And Ms. Catalan Mata and her husband received threatening phone calls where they said that they were supposed to stop basically being members of the particular social group of witnesses in a criminal investigation. We're told to stop investigating or they would have to eat the same dirt that their daughters ate. I mean, that was one of the more graphic threats that they received.
Okay, so let me ask you about the torture, the cat claim. Seems to me there's some question on whether that has been waived or not on your argument regarding the negative reasonable fear determination regarding torture. So has that been waived by you since it wasn't really presented in the opening brief?
No, Your Honor. It was raised in the motion to reopen. It was raised before the immigration judge, and it was briefly raised in the opening brief, but it still is before the court. As a matter of justice, the court can still review that issue. And the issue of torture is before the court in terms of the fact that their daughters were murdered. And let me just back up, but Ms. Catalan was found to be credible by the immigration judge, or excuse me, by the asylum office. And the immigration judge doesn't say anything about credibility or negative credibility finding. And so one of the things that Ms. Catalan says is that the mayor in her town was connected with the drug cartel organization who was responsible for her daughter's murders. So that does implicate the Guatemalan government. Additionally, she also testified that when the house got up.
Can you back up just for a second as to what you just said? So on the cat claim, I'm wondering about the evidence in the record to establish acquiescence by public officials. And you noted that she said that she thought the mayor of the town had some connection to the cartels. Nothing more. I mean, that may be true, but does that mean that the government's acquiescing in what happened to the daughters or any threats to her? And then that's juxtaposed to the government of Guatemala putting her in a witness protection program, warning them of danger, and taking steps that appeared as if they were trying to protect her and her family, as opposed to acquiescing in torture or past persecution.
Yes, Your Honor, I think you make a very important point that's often brought up in cat claims. I think it would be implausible or it's incorrect to say that the entire government of Guatemala is corrupt. There are certainly large facets of the government of Guatemala who are not corrupt, but there are persons in the government that are corrupt, and the corruption is so widespread that most of murders are not prosecuted in Guatemala. One never knows whether, when one is reporting an incident to the police, whether that will be taken back to the offenders or what for bribes, or whether that will be taken to successful prosecution. And the most common situation is that things are not prosecuted. The impunity for crimes is very high. And that is part of the U.S. Department of State Human Rights Report talks about that, the corruption. While on the one hand, it's like the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing of the government. So on the one hand, they are receiving assistance from the Guatemalan government. They are in witness protection. They're frankly told to leave the country because it's not safe.
Who told them to leave?
The police, the Guatemalan police.
And they told them to leave because why?
The investigation had been compromised.
And so your contention is that acquiescence, or is it a sort of a resignation? Is it a warning, we can no longer protect you? And would a claim that we are no longer able to protect you satisfy the acquiescence of the government prong?
I think that's an excellent question, Your Honor. Certainly turning a blind eye is the standard for whether or not someone meets the threshold for protection of the Convention Against Torture. And if they are resigned to the fact that an investigation has been compromised, I would say that would constitute turning a blind eye to the torture, instead of perhaps moving them to another location, or there's other options that they could have taken to protect Ms. Catalan and her husband.
Ms. Ayala, I was just wanted to ask a follow-up question on that. I thought it was somebody from the Department of Ministry or something who was overseeing the witness protection program, and not local officials, but can you tell me what do you know about who was overseeing the witness protection program?
Your Honor, I'm not sure who was actually administering it. I know it is a federal law, the witness protection program, but I don't know, and I don't think it was in the record specifically who, but I do know that there was investigations that were happening with a Tecultican local office, and then the national ministry office.
Let me ask you a question about due process before your time is up here. I don't think you're arguing that IJ was required to consider the documents that Ms. Catalan submitted at her regional hearing. It's supposed to be, I guess, at the IJ's discretion, but I have some question here. If the IJ knew that he had that discretion based on what I read in the transcript, what's your take there?
Well, Your Honor, and I didn't get into this because I don't want to sidestep some of the more important issues, but I mean, I think the immigration judge was wrong, and he said that he couldn't consider the evidence because it wouldn't have been fair to the asylum office. And I think what really he should have been looking at was whether or not it was fair to Ms. Catalan, that the proceedings are for her and not for the agency.
Was there anything in what the IJ said or did that suggested he thought he didn't have jurisdiction to reopen? In other words, distinct from the question of documents, did the IJ appear to recognize that he did have discretion to reopen?
Yes, it appears that he does, and he indicated that he denied the motion to reopen based on matter of Beckford, I believe it was. And also that it would have not resulted in a substantially different result. And then he cited Henriquez Rivas in matter of LEA.
OK. Okay. Thank you. I'll give you a minute or two for rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. May it please the court. My name is Jesse Lorenz, and I represent the U.S. Attorney General in this case. There are two PFRs before this case. There are two petitions for review before this court in this case. The first involves the immigration judge's concurrence with the negative reasonable fear determination. Substantial evidence supports the immigration judge's decision. Regarding withholding of removal, Catalan established no nexus to a protected ground. And I think, and specifically in looking at her interview before the asylum officer, she basically talked about revenge, that Ms. Sosa wanted revenge on her daughters, and then later the people Ms. Sosa hired to kill her daughters wanted revenge on her. As this court's held in cases like Madrigal, revenge is not a motive that is protected under the Immigration Nationality Act.
But you can have two bases, can't you? I mean,
yes.
But Madrigal says that too.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, though, if you look at the interview notes, there's never really any mention of anything other than a motivation of revenge. I mean, the interview lasted about 6 hours long. She actually had two interviews before an asylum officer. One was about an hour. The other one was about 6 hours long. Now, there were some breaks in there, but approximately 6 hours. And the asylum officer asked a lot of questions about the motivation of the people who killed her daughters. And every time it came back to a motivation of revenge, it doesn't appear to be a mixed motive case at all. It just appears to be a case of revenge, which draws no nexus to a protected ground. Moving on to Kat, I mean, I think that is the only issue before the court. I mean, the asylum officer and the immigration judge made no determination on the particular social groups, the cognizability of those groups. So the case fails total on the nexus finding. Moving on to Kat, as we argued in our brief, she waived Kat in her opening brief, even if she had. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I guess I just want to follow up a little bit more on
sure.
that, because it certainly seems possible that the local cartel members were targeting Ms. Catalan based on a personal conflict. But as I just mentioned, you know, we have two possible bases. I have a hard time seeing how that kind of conflict would prevent Ms. Catalan from also showing persecution based on membership in a particular social group.
And that's not the government's argument. It is possible, but I think the record has to compel it in this case. And there's just nothing in this record that would compel that conclusion. I mean, her own interview before the asylum officer is it was all about revenge. So there's just nothing in there that would prove that it was for a reason other than revenge, even under her own theory of the case.
Well, but she was pushing for the investigation to continue and to try to get the cartels. Isn't that correct?
Well, I mean, that's what it appears from the interview notes, that she was pursuing an investigation. But when they asked her why they were interested in her, it was revenge for her pursuing that investigation. But that doesn't tie it to a social group of her family. There's just nothing there other. I mean, also this court has to keep in mind this is the substantial evidence standard review. There's nothing compelling a conclusion that it's anything other than this motivation of revenge in the record.
Okay. Regarding torture, is it your position that Ms. Catalan's placement in the witness protection prevents a finding of government acquiescence? It seems to me that Ms. Catalan is alleging that other officials, specifically the local police, acquiesced in the local cartel's activities.
Sure. And first, I think our waiver argument is well supported. She didn't advance the claim in her opening brief, but also
we have case law, I think, that says that if you address this in your brief, which you did,
sure,
then the waiver's not there. So that's why I'm asking this.
Okay. No, and that's fair. I'm aware of the case law. But I would say in response to your first question about acquiescence, again, keeping in mind the substantial evidence standard of review, but also it does show a willingness. And I think what the acquiescence standard is a willful blindness or a breach of duty. And here it can't be said that these officials who were trying to protect her and her family breached their duty to do so. And in fact, it seems like they went out of their way to warn her.
Counsel, what do we do when the police say, you better leave? That's her claim. And we sort of have to take her word for it at this point.
Sure.
And they said, you know, we can't protect you anymore. You ought to leave the country. Now, that's something less than sort of willful blindness or, you know, absolute acquiescence. We're going to be part of the pocket of the cartel. We see those kinds of allegations from time to time. But if they've said, you know, we've done all we can and the system is now rigged against you and your lives are in danger, does that satisfy the government acquiescence point?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that does become a tougher question.
What happens when the government has reached the end of its resources?
You know, and I don't know if that is something that's contemplated by acquiescence. I mean, in the context here, I mean, there were efforts. It wasn't like they were accepting of it or consenting or, you know, turning a blind eye to it. They were trying. And I mean, I think some of the caseload that this court has is, you know, even if no arrests are made or no, you know, it's not perfect. It can't be perfect all the time. But if there's an effort and even if no arrests are made, it doesn't mean that they're acquiescing to it.
If we had a situation, let's think of the disaster in Rwanda a number of years ago where there's a total breakdown in the government and you have two warring tribes. And we have an ethnic cleansing situation. There may not be government acquiescence in the sense that the government has become your persecutor. But if the government is helpless to prevent anything, I don't think we would have denied those people had CAT claims.
Sure, and I mean I think that's more of an extreme hypothetical because it would be so wide scale.
I'm just trying to get you to admit the principle and then we'll come back down the ladder of abstraction.
I think that's fair. I mean, I don't know if, you know, I guess it's hard to say in that situation, would asylum law be applicable or a refugee type situation be applicable? And I don't know enough about refugee law to really answer that question. But as far as cat protection goes, it does require some sort of government acquiescence.
If you were in a cartel controlled area of Mexico in which you had maybe some local corruption, but just simply, again, a lack of resources, we might not say that the Mexican government had acquiesced. They weren't agreeing that the Sinaloa cartel was a really good idea and they could do whatever they wanted. But if the government is powerless to prevent anything or to protect you, surely that would satisfy the cat requirements, wouldn't it?
Well, I've definitely have dealt with the area of law and cat protection we're talking about, like the cartels in Mexico. And I mean, I don't think it's just that they can't necessarily control the cartels. There has to be like kind of a affirmative breach of their duty to protect the person. And I don't know if you can say there's like an affirmative breach here where they're trying to protect her. And basically they're saying, okay, this is getting really bad for you. So we can't really, they're not like turning a blind eye to it. They're aware of it. They're acknowledging that they were trying to help her. I think that's a little bit different than saying they're acquiescing. You know, when you talk about, especially, you know, you talk about an affirmative duty that they're breaching. I don't know if you can say that here. They were protecting her. And I think in this hypothetical you raised about the Mexican drug cartels, it's not necessarily that the government is totally effective or there's resources in certain areas. It has to be like kind of an affirmative breach of duty. And I don't know if you get that here in this context, especially with this evidence. I mean, they're in a shelter or some sort of witness protection program, but then at some point that unravels, but that's not an affirmative breach of duty. And in fact, they gave him a warning. So I don't know if that constitutes a cat claim.
Counsel, I've got a little bit different question. And I think it's a pretty simple question, but I also think it may appear to be kind of a stupid question, but I just want to make sure I understand. I've been on the court for a long time. I don't remember seeing reasonable fear reviews by this court until the last couple of years. We always got the asylum withholding CAT claims, and that's the predominance of the immigration cases that we see. If we were to decide that evidence compels this, she gets to apply for withholding, and then we go to the full circus. Is that what happens?
So if it's remanded here, I'm not entirely certain the procedural. I mean, the regulations are pretty clear about what happens when an asylum officer finds no credible fear, or an asylum officer finds a credible or a reasonable fear. I'm sorry, I'm mixing them up, but no reasonable fear or a reasonable fear. Then if there is a reasonable fear, the immigration judge does the full withholding of removal proceedings. But if there is no reasonable fear, then it goes for this
reason. Grant withholding or not grant withholding, or grant asylum or not grant asylum, right?
The immigration judge or?
Yeah, the IJ and then the BIA would have a shot at it after that.
Well, sure. So if the immigration judge concurs with the reasonable fear, as here, it comes to this court. If not, then they would go to full withholding of removal proceedings. And then, yes, you would see the more, what you kind of noted is.
The reasonable fear interview is really just a screening interview to see if we're going to give you the full-blown treatment.
Yes, and it's used in very limited circumstances, like here where we have a reinstated order of removal for somebody who's been previously ordered removed, and that order of removal has been executed. Then it goes for kind of a expedited screening procedure. It's not meant to be a full removal hearing, but I would note,
if we were to disagree with the IJ's decision here, that's not the same as disagreeing with the IJ and the BIA's decision in an asylum withholding CAT claim that had gone through a full proceeding.
No, that would be different. Yes, it would be remanded only to the IJ. It wouldn't go to the board, but
the judgment of our court in this context is just to say, we disagree with you at screening. This case should have been, she should have been allowed to proceed. Let her go through. And then you get to make the credibility findings. You get to make whatever evidence she wants to come. She can find her husband in the process. You can consolidate the cases, whatever further things we want to do. She gets a lawyer and so on. It becomes a lot more formal process.
Well, I mean, she was not denied a lawyer here. I mean, they asked her if she wanted a lawyer before the asylum officer. So she said no.
It's a much, much more formal process.
It is a much more formal process. But these are meant to quickly and expeditiously screen people. And I think here, I mean, her testimony was accepted as credible. Her story was believed. It's just that she didn't establish any nexus. And I mean, I think even if you look at the evidence that she submitted with her motion to reopen, it doesn't change the fact that there's no motive that she's identified other than revenge. So even, and this is hypothetical, obviously, but in more formal proceedings, I don't see how that changes the outcome here. I mean, I think we're still with a claim that has revenge as the motive, and that's just not a protected ground in these kind of proceedings or in more formal removal proceedings. I just also would like to say a couple of things about her due process claim. I think she was afforded all the process she was due. I mean, I think one thing that's, you know, she's saying that she wasn't allowed to submit evidence, but one thing that I would note here is that she did have two interviews before an asylum officer. One was 1 hour, the other was 6 hours. During her hearing before the immigration judge summarized her claim. He read it back to her. She agreed with it. He asked her if she wanted to say anything further. She said, yes, I'm afraid, but didn't add anything else to her claim. Then her attorney was allowed to present argument. And so she was afforded an opportunity to add more to her claim before the immigration judge. He just didn't consider the evidence that was not before the asylum officer.
But the Ms. Catalan wanted to introduce some documents. Is that correct at the hearing? Did I understand that correctly?
That is correct, yes. And the immigration judge said no.
He didn't say no. I mean, he did end up not allowing that. But in the hearing, he said, I believe, in my own review, then entertain new evidence. And that's at CIR 156-57. And so it seems to me that he didn't, or I'm trying to figure out, you know, because the way it comes across is that he didn't know he could allow new evidence. And to me, that might be a legal error. And I just wanted to ask you about that.
Well, I guess I read that it is more as he didn't think it was fair to the asylum officer. And that's not, I guess, technically the correct way of looking at it. But I mean, at the bottom, he wasn't required to accept that evidence. I mean, and like I said, he did afford her the opportunity to add to her claim through testimony, but she said there was nothing else to add other than that she's afraid, which, like I said, she had already established. Your Honors, I can see my time is up, so we would ask that this court affirm the decision below.
All right.
Unless there's any more questions. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. Ms. Ayala?
I think you're on mute. Mm-hmm. You're muted.
Thank you. It's in AR-35 where she, Ms. Catalan, testifies that she was threatened a number of times by phone and told, quote, not to investigate her daughter's death because she would be next. So that's not a case of revenge. That is a case where she's clearly being persecuted because she's pursuing an investigation. Regarding the CAT claim, I don't think that we can pick sides in the government and say that this side of the government is helping and protecting her when it's the person who is persecuting her is a member of the government. It's a mayor, and he himself, like I said, he's a member of the government. So I think just the fact that he himself is acquiescing to her torture should be sufficient.
What was the evidence that he was acquiescing beyond he had some connection to the cartel? Did he do some specific things?
Yeah, when her house was shot up, the people were in a car that belonged to the mayor's office. And then briefly, I just wanted to talk about the fact that she, a matter of LEA, the attorney general talks about the fact that many nuclear families do not qualify as social group because it doesn't qualify under the social distinction requirement. Because she was high profile, because the murders were high profile, we would submit that she does qualify and the social distinction requirement is met. She was recognized in Mexico. She was recognized in Yuma related to the murder of her daughters. So based on these facts, and we ask that the court remand the case to the immigration judge for a reasonable fear approval. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ayala, Mr. Lorenz. Appreciate your oral argument presentations here today. The case of Jacqueline Patricia Catalan Mata versus William Barr is submitted. Thank you. That concludes our calendar. I want to thank everybody, especially our technical support that we received here today. And so we are adjourned. Thank you.